2. Time for bed. The clock said so, but suppose the power had been off again, as it had for almost a whole day last week. The clock might be hours wrong. It might, in fact, Nicholas St. James thought morbidly, really be time to get up. And the metabolism of his body, even after all these years underground, told him nothing. In the shared bathroom of their cubby, 67B of the Tom Mix, water ran. His wife was taking a shower. So Nicholas searched about her vanity table until he found her wristwatch, read it. Both timepieces agreed, therefore that was that. And yet he felt wide awake. The Maury Souza affair, he realized. It preyed vulturally on him, made a trough of his brain. This is how it must feel, he thought, to contract the bag plague, where those viruses get in and cause your head to expand until it pops like a blown-up paper bag. Maybe I'm sick, he thought. Actually, even more so than Souza. And Maury Souza, the chief mechanic of their ant tank, now in his 70s, was dying. I'm out, Rita called from the bathroom. However, the shower still ran. She was not out. I mean, you can come in and brush your teeth, or put them in a glass, or whatever it is you do. What I do, he thought, is get the bag plague. Probably, that last damaged letty they sent down hadn't been sighted properly. Or I picked up the stink of shrink, and from that he physically cringed. Imagine, he thought, having your head diminish in size, features included, to the circumference of a marble. Okay, he said reflexively, and began to unlace his work boots. He felt the need to be clean. He would shower, too, despite the severe water ration currently in force at the Tom Mix, and by his own edict. When you do not feel clean, he realized, you are doomed. Considering exactly what we could be made unclean by, the microscopic things downfalling to us that some careless ambulatory metal hunk of handmade parts had failed to side out of existence before yanking the drop switch, shooting 300 pounds of contaminated matter to us, something both hot and dirty at the same time, hot with radioactivity and dirty with germs. Great combination, he thought. And in the back part of his mind, again he recalled, Souza is dying. What else matters? Because how long can we last without that one grumpy old man? Approximately 2 weeks, because their quota came up for auditing in 2 weeks. And this time, if he knew his luck and his tanks, it would be one of the Minister of the Interior Stanton Brose's agents, not General Holtz. They rotated. It prevented, the image of Yancey on the big screen had once said, corruption. Picking up the odd phone, he dialed the tank's clinic. How is he? On the other end, Dr. Carol Tye, their GP in charge of their small clinic, said, no change. He's conscious. Come on down. He tells me he'd like to talk to you. Okay. Nicholas rang off, shouted through the noise of running water, to Rita that he was going and left their cubby. Outside in the common corridor, he bumped past other tankers on their ways from the shops and recreation rooms to their cubbies for bed. The clocks had been right, because he saw numerous bathrobes and standard-issue synthetic wubber-fuzz slippers. This really is bedtime, he decided. But he knew he still could not sleep. 3 floors down at the clinic, he passed through empty waiting rooms. The clinic was closed, except for its bed patients, and then passed the nurse's station. The nurse stood up respectfully to greet him because, after all, Nicholas was their elected president, and then he found himself at the closed door of Maury Souza's room with its quiet, do not disturb sign on the door. He entered. In the wide, white bed lay something flat, something so squashed that it could only gaze up as if it were a reflection, something dimly seen in a pool that absorbed light rather than reflected it. The pool in which the old man lay was a consumer of energy of all kinds, Nicholas realized as he walked to the bed. This is only a husk left here. It has been drained as if a spider got to it. A world spider, or for us, rather, a sub-world, under-spider. But still a drinker of human existence, even below this far. From his supine immobility, the old man moved his lips. "Hi." "Hi, you old knurl-headed frab," Nicholas said, and drew a chair up beside the bed. "How do you feel?" After a time, as if it had taken that long for Nicholas's words to reach him, that great journey across space, the old mechanic said, "Not so good, Nick." "You don't know," Nicholas thought, "what you've got, unless Carol has told you since I last discussed you with her." He eyed the old mechanic, wondering if there was an instinct. Pancreatitis was fatal in almost 100% of its cases, he knew. Carol had told him. But, of course, no one had told or would tell Sousa because the miracle might happen. "You'll pick up," Nicholas said clumsily. "Listen, Nick, how many leadies we made this month?" He considered whether to lie or tell the truth. Sousa had been here in this bed 8 days. Surely he had lost contact, could not check and trip him up. So he lied. 15. Then, a labored pause. Sousa stared upward, never turned his eyes towards Nicholas, as if he were looking away in shame. "We could still make our quota." "What do I care," Nicholas said, "if we make our quota?" He had known Sousa, been shut up with him here at the Tom Mix for the total war period, 15 years. "I care whether..." God, a misspoken word. Impossible to amend, too. "Whether I get out of here," Sousa whispered. "Naturally, I mean, when?" He felt furious with himself. And now he saw Carol at the door, looking professional in her white smock, her low-heeled shoes, carrying her clipboard on which no doubt she had Sousa's chart. Without a word, Nicholas rose, walked away from the bed, and passed Carol and out into the corridor. She followed. They stood together in the empty corridor, and then Carol said, "He'll live one more week, and then he'll die. Whether your tongue wags and says weather, or if you..." "I told him our shops had turned out 15 leadies so far this month. Make sure nobody else tells him different." "I hear," she said. "It's more like 5. 7. He told her not because she was their doctor and someone they depended on, but because of the relationship. Always he told Carol everything. That was one of the emotional hooks that gaffed him, held him to her. She, and this was so rare, could see through any sham, even the little daily innocences. So why try this now? Carol never wanted pretty words. She lived by the truth. Here now she had once again gotten it. "Then we can't meet the quota," she said, matter-of-factly. He nodded. "Partly it's because they've asked for 3 type 7s, and that's hard. That strains our shops. If it had all been the 3 or 4 types, but it hadn't, it never was, nor would be, ever, so long as the surface war lasted. You know," Carol said presently, "that on the surface, artificial pancreases, artiforgs, are available. You've considered this possibility, of course, in your official capacity." Nicholas said, "It's illegal. Military hospitals only. Priority. Rating 2A. We don't qualify." "There is said to be..." "And get caught. It would no doubt be a quick kangaroo court military tribunal session and then execution if one were caught trading on the black market. In fact, if one were caught up there at all." "Are you afeard to go up?" Carol asked with her brisk, brilliant, hard scrutiny. "Yep." He nodded. "It was so. 2 weeks. Death by destruction of the red blood cell-making capacity of the bone marrow. 1 week. The bag plague, or the stink of shrink, or raw claw paw." And he already felt germ-phobic. Already, a few months ago, he had quaked with the trauma of it, as did virtually every tanker, although in actual fact not one case of any of the poxes had broken out at the Tom Mix. "You can," Carol said, "call a meeting of those, you know, those you can trust, and ask for a volunteer." "God damn it, I'll go if anyone does." But he didn't want to send anyone because he knew what was up there. No one would return because a homotropic weapon, if not the tribunal, would flush him out of hiding, and it would follow him until he died, and that in a matter of minutes, perhaps. And homotropic weapons were vile things. They did it in a vile way. Carol said, I know how badly you want to save old Sousa. I love him, he said. Above and beyond the shops, the quota, all of that. Did he ever, in all the time we've been locked up down below here, refuse anyone anything? Any time of the night, a leaking water pipe, break in power, clogged protein chute. He always came and hammered and patched and stitched and rewrapped it back into operation. And since Sousa was, officially, chief mechanic, he could have dispatched any one of 50 assistants and snoozed on. From the old man, Nicholas had learned, you did the job yourself. You did not drop it in the lap of a subordinate. As, he thought, the war works devolved down here to us, building the metal fighters and 8 basic types and so on, with the Estes Park government, the functionaries of West Dem and of Bros personally, breathing at us at close, close range. And as if the words magically impelled the unseen presence, a gray, faint shape moved urgently down the hall towards him and Carol. Commissioner Dale Nunes, all right. Eager, busy, pressed on by his business. Nick! Panting, Nunes read straight from a slip of paper. A big speech in 10 minutes. Get on the all-cubby circuit and get everyone into Wheeling Hall. We'll watch in unison because there'll be questions. This is serious. His fast bird eyes flew in their spasm of alarm. Honest to God, Nick, the way I got it over the Cokes, it's all of Detroit. They penetrated the final ring. Jesus, Nicholas said, and moved reflexively towards a nearby odd tap of the circuit which ran speaker-wise throughout each floor and chamber of the Tom Mix. But it's bedtime, he said to Commissioner Nunes. A lot of them are undressing or in bed. Couldn't they watch on their own individual cub sets? The questions, Nunes said agitatedly. They're going to up the quotas because of this Detroit fiasco. That's what I'm afraid of. And I want to be sure everyone knows why, if that's the case. He did not look happy. Nicholas said, But Dale, you know our situation. We can't even just get them into Wheeling Hall, okay? We can talk later. Lifting the microphone, Nicholas said, addressing every cubby in the tank, People, this is President St. James. And I'm sorry, but we've all got to be at Wheeling Hall in 10 minutes. Come as you are. Don't worry about that. A bathrobe is fine. It's grave news. Nunes murmured. Yancey'll speak. For sure, they told me. The Protector, Nicholas said into the mic, and heard his voice boom from each end of the deserted clinic corridor, as it was everywhere else in the great subsurface ant tank of 1,500 human souls, is going to address us, I understand. And he'll accept questions. He rang off, feeling defeated. It was not a reasonable time to give them bad news. And with Sousa, and the quota, and the audit to come... I can't leave my patient, Carol said. Upset, Nunes said. But I was told to assemble everyone, doctor. Then, Carol said, with that superlative intelligence that made Nicholas both fear and adore her, Mr. Sousa must get up and come, too. If the edict is to be fully obeyed. It got through. Nunes, for all his bureaucratic rigidity, his almost neurotic determination to fulfill to the letter each order coaxed down to them, via him, nodded. Okay, you stay here. To Nicholas, he said, Let's go. He started off, burdened by their mass consciences. His main task was to supervise their loyalty. Nunes was the tank's polcom, its political commissioner. 5 minutes later, Nicholas St. James sat stiffly, formally, in his president's chair, slightly elevated, in row 1 of Wheeling Hall. Behind him, they had all assembled, shifted and rustled, murmured and stirred, everyone, including himself, gazing at the floor-to-ceiling vidscreen. This was their window, their sole window on the above world, and they took rather seriously what was received on its giant surface. He wondered if Rita had heard the announcement or if she still blissfully loitered in the shower, calling a few remarks to him now and then. Any improvement? Nunes whispered to Nicholas. In old Sousa? In pancreatitis? Are you kidding? The commissioner was an idiot. I've passed on 15 memos, Nunes said, to them up top. And not one of the 15, Nicholas said, was a formal request for an artiforc pancreas that Carol could surgically graft in. I just begged for a suspension on the audit. Pleadingly, Nunes said, Nick, politics is the art of the possible. We might get a suspension, but we won't get an artiforc pancreas. They're just not available. Instead, we've got to write off Sousa and escalate one of the lesser mechanics, like Winton or Bob's or... All at once, the great communal screen turned from lusterless gray to beaming white, and the speaker system said, Good evening. In Wheeling Hall, the audience of 1,500 mumbled, Good evening. It was a legal formality, in that no odd receptor carried anything up. The lines carried data only one way, down, from above to below. News bulletin, the announcer's voice continued. On the screen, a stopped tape, buildings caught and suspended in half disintegration. And then the tape traveled on, and the buildings, with a roar like the odious tap-tap-tapping of distant alien drums, pitched into dust and rained down, dissolved. Smoke took their place, and like ants, countless leadies who had inhabited Detroit spilled out and ran, as if from a tipped-over quart jar. They were squashed, systematically, by invisible forces. The odd track grew. The drums drifted forward, and the camera, no doubt from an I-Spy West M satellite, panned up on one great public building, library, church, school, or bank, perhaps all of these combined. It showed, somewhat slowed down, the solidity of the structure as it demolecularized. Objects have been carried back to their dust origin again. And it could have been us up there, not Letty's, because he himself had lived a year in Detroit as a child. Thank God for all of them, commies and U.S. citizens alike, that the war had broken out on a colony world in a hassle as to which block, West M or Pack Peep, held the bigger dog's share. Because in that first year of war on Mars, the populations of Earth had been hurried underground. And, he thought, we're still here. And it isn't good, but it beats that. He watched the screen fixedly, saw a flock of leadies melt, hence the name, and to his horror still try to run while melting. He looked away. Awful, Commissioner Nunes beside him muttered, gray-faced. All at once, in the empty seat to Nicholas's right, Rita appeared in bathrobe and slippers. With her came Nicholas's kid brother, Stu. Both, staring at the screen, said nothing to him as if he weren't there. In fact, each person in Wheeling Hall was isolated now by the catastrophe on the giant TV screen. And the announcer then said it for them. This was Detroit, May 19th, Year of God, 2025. Amen. It took only a few seconds, once the defensive shield around the city had been broken, to get in and do this. For 15 years, Detroit had existed intact. Well, Marshal Harenzini, meeting in the thoroughly protected Kremlin with the Supreme Soviet, could pay a painter to paint, as symbol of a direct hit, a tiny sphere on the door of their chamber. Chalk up one more U.S. city for their side. And in Nicholas's mind, through the horror of seeing this decapitation of one more of the few remaining heads of Western civilization, which he really did believe in and love, there came the niggling, selfish, personal thought once more. It means a higher quota. More must be achieved underground as less every day remained above. Nunes murmured. Yancey will explain now how it happened to happen, so get ready. And Nunes, of course, was right, because the protector never gave up. He had that grand turtle-like unwillingness, which Nicholas admired in the man, to admit that this blow was mortal, and yet... They did get us out, Nicholas realized. And even you, Talbot Yancey, our Spear Paul Mill leader, brave enough to live in your surface fortress in the Rockies, even you, good friend, can't undo what's just been done. My fellow Americans, Yancey's voice came, and it was not even weary. Nicholas blinked, startled by the vigor. Yancey seemed almost unaffected, to have remained true to the Stoa, to his West Point heritage. He viewed it all, accepted and understood, but no emotion unhinged his calm reason. You have seen, Yancey continued in his low, late middle-age voice, that of a seasoned old warrior, ramrod in body, clear in mind, good for a few more years, not like the husk, the dying thing in the clinic bed over which Carol watched. A terrible thing. Nothing is left of Detroit. And as you know, a good deal of war material has emerged by her fair autofax all these years, and now that is lost. But we have sacrificed no human life, the one commodity which we cannot, will not, relinquish. Good point, Nunes muttered, jotting notes. Beside Nicholas, all at once, Carol Tighe appeared in her white smock, low shoes. He rose instinctively, stood to face her. He passed away, Carol said. Sousa, just now. I at once froze him. I was right there at the bed, so there was no time loss. Brain tissue won't have suffered. He just went. She tried to smile, and then tears filled her eyes. It shocked him. He had never seen Carol cry, and something in him was horrified, as if it was wicked, this that he saw. "We shall endure this," the odd track of the Koch's transmission from the Estes Park Fortress continued. And now, on the screen, Yancey's face appeared, and the war, the rolling clouds of matter in suspension or turned to hot gas, faded. And it was a stiff, firm man at a large oak desk in some hidden spot where Soviet, even the awful, deadly new Sino-20 red-dot missiles, had never found him. Nicholas got Carol seated, got her attention turned to the screen. "With each passing day," Yancey said, and he spoke with pride, a good and reasonable pride, "we grow stronger, not weaker. You are stronger." And by God, he looked then directly at Nicholas and Carol and Dale Nunes and Stu and Rita and all the rest of them at the Tom Mix, at every one of them except Sousa, who was dead. "And when you are dead," Nicholas realized, "no one, not even the Protector, can tell you that you are growing stronger. And when you died just now, we also died. Unless that pancreas, at whatever cost, from whatever ugly black market source which robs a military hospital, can be obtained." Sooner or later, Nicholas realized, despite the law against it, I will have to go up to the surface.